Going to read this morning, Canto 3, Chapter 27. Text 13. Little background. This chapter is called Understanding Material Nature, and chapter 27 comes after chapter 26. And chapter 26 is that really complicated Sankhya chapter, the unfolding of the material elements, and from this comes that, and from that comes the next thing, and the cause and the effect of how Krishna does it, how he manifests the 24 elements of creation. And at the end of that chapter he presents the purpose why all of that involved explanation is detachment through knowledge, and identification with the self instead of the non-self, and then the self looking to the Supreme Self in devotion. In other words, the fruit of Sankhya, just as it's in Bhagavad Gita, the first half of chapter 2 is Sankhya. Then in chapter 7, a few verses on Sankhya. In chapter 13, it's Sankhya. Why is that an important part of a life of devotion? Well, knowing what's what and who we are and who we aren't is necessary. And clearing those misconceptions allows the mind then to properly focus on the Supreme. And, you know, devotion is not just sentiment. There's this nice quote. I'm trying to recall, the gist of the quote is Bhaktivinoda Thakur indicating that while people have beliefs in religion, generally speaking, they don't follow, which was Prabhupada's challenge to persons he met who are Christian, you're not Christian, or something like that. It's because they should follow what Christ said, and you're not following what Christ said, so you're not Christian. In any case, that's just a behavior. Then there's the consciousness behind behaviors, and Sankhya helps to set up a proper spiritual conception of self, dismissing the misconceptions of self, and it assists in the process of devotion. So then, the beginning of 27. This is, the emphasis shifts away from Sankhya to devotion. And devotion means the object is very clear in focus, and then there's very practical instructions on how to lead one's life in devotion. There's practical instructions for householders with their livelihood and how they engage themselves. And then, of course, Prabhupada's purports. So just the day before yesterday, discussed verses 11 and 12. Well, we'll read 10, 11, and 12 before 13. He goes very quickly from, you know, distinction from matter and spirit to to discussing a life of devotion, then all of a sudden he speaks about the higher stages of devotion. Because when we're engaged in a life of devotion, while we may be down here, we should know what the goal is, what we're striving for, and why we're striving for it. So he discusses being situated in transcendence. Well, read text 9. One's seeing power should be increased through knowledge of spirit and matter, and one should not unnecessarily identify himself with the body and thus become attracted by bodily relationships. Text 10. One should be situated in the transcendental position beyond the stage of material consciousness and should be aloof from all other conceptions of life, thus realizing freedom from false ego. Ta-da! Celebrate. Freedom from false ego. One should see his own self just as he sees the sun in the sky. These sun metaphors are throughout this chapter. A liberated soul realizes the absolute personality, Godhead, who is transcendental and who is manifest as a reflection, even in the false ego. Although it sounded like false ego went away, it's still around. He is the support of the material cause, and he enters into everything. He is absolute, one without a second, and he is the eye of the illusory energy. Text 12. The presence of the Supreme Lord can be realized just as the sun is realized first as a reflection on water, then again as a second reflection on the wall of a room, although the sun itself is situated in the sky. I don't want to give those classes all over again, but just very quickly, so minus the beautiful detail of the metaphor, we should see ourselves like the sun. So qualitatively, as spark is to the fire, the individual soul is to the supreme. So the sun is situated in one place, although by the light of the sun, the energy of the sun is distributed everywhere. This is part of this is the energetic and the energy. So matter is energy, living entity is energy, and there's the energetic. So we're like the energetic. And as the energetic is understood, the presence of the energetic is understood, the sun, the presence of the sun is understood by a reflection in a dark room. There's a pot. There's the sun. The sun shines on the pot. We can see in the pot the reflection of the sun that indicate the presence of the sun. And then the glistening of the surface of the water may reflect the light onto a wall. So the reflection on the wall is a reflection from the pot, which is from the sun. So the sun is on the wall. The sun is in the pot, although actually the sun is in the sky. In this way, similarly, presence of Krishna can be understood everywhere. It's the detail is here, so I don't want to retell all the detail. But it's by inference. It's using our intelligence, the discriminating power of the intelligence, to understand. It's not yet bhakti. Bhakti is one can actually see the presence of Krishna eye to eye. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. This is strengthening the intelligence to have the intelligence, on the one hand, withdraw the material conceptions of life and then put forward the spiritual conception of life, the presence of Krishna, even within false ego. All of that's nicely described in the second canto, that very amazing verse about by the process of intelligence one can understand the existence of God. So even the material energies, seeing them in a spiritual conception, one can see the presence of Krishna. If one is detached from the material conception, one has a spiritual conception, and has intelligence is properly guided in these ways. It's, you know, steady intelligence can save one from a lot of trouble. Spiritual intelligence, the trouble of being implicated in matter by misidentification with it, the affinity to try to be the enjoyer of it, and the subsequent features of duality that come from material consciousness, you know, the unwanted part of suffering due to misidentification and attachment. These are helpful. It's not the essence of bhakti, but they're very helpful for bhakti. Lord Kapila is not teaching Devahuti how to be an intellectual. He's the personality of Godhead. She's his mother, or devotee, in that Vatsalya rasa, and he's strengthening her bhakti, because all of this discussion, like all of this discussion, goes back to this original question that Devahuti asks, which is, how do I become free from family attachment? And the circumstances, Kardamuni, after so many thousands of years of their living together as husband and wife, he's now gone. Because as the commitment was made to Swayambhuva Manu, I will marry your daughter, but when there's a son of age to take care of Devahuti, I want to resume going back to the forest and doing my meditation in Satya Yuga. So that commitment was made. Nine daughters, and now Kapila Dev is born of mature age. He's gone, and she's feeling her mind is disturbed, very troubled. One can only imagine living with somebody for thousands of years and then they're gone. Her mind is very troubled. And she's asking Kapila Dev to relieve her of this bewildered state. She even specifically says, it's your energy. You've imposed this energy. Please take it away. And his taking away is not, I mean, in one sense it's something mystical, but in another sense it's devotional. And part of devotional is these things that we're hearing. He's not just, I just go back to that starting point, he's not training Devahuti to be a jnani, or like, you know, an empiric expert. Similarly, for us, to take these things, it's not just learn the push and pull of the material energy, and then somehow we'll be like, we'll go back to Godhead. However, it's to help strengthen our unsteady condition to become steady, by proper discrimination, understanding sambandh again, understanding what's what, is necessary, even in the process of chanting, what to speak of, you know, the execution of our devotional service, in practical terms. There's the notion there's the practical application of the notion. And that which steadies it is having proper conceptions instead of not proper conceptions. It goes back to this thing of Bhaktivinoda saying people have their ideas of religion, but they don't follow it. Why don't they follow it? Well, they don't have the right conception. But so they have a sentiment, and they profess the sentiment, but it's misguided. So Kapila Deva's providing this response, and in response to her question, how to become... After she asks her question, I like this part, he pauses, just smiles. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur discloses what he's thinking. And he's thinking, my dear mother, why are you asking this? You're my mother. And I'm the personality of Godhead. You're a pure devotee. And you're only asking this for the benefit of others. So I'll respond. So it's for the benefit of us. How to keep our minds steady, that is, carrying the spiritual conception and not the other kinds, and remain fixed instead of unsteady and not fixed, you know, in the up and down, the sine curve. And how can it become steady? There are a number of ways in this whole, this is understanding material nature in relation to Krishna. It's sambandh again. In the practical execution of our service. Before we come to the prema stage, how are we to see Krishna? You can see Krishna in the prema stage by the anjana of prema, smearing our eyes. And before that, how are we going to stay fixed in seeing Krishna within all things? Here's a very practical advice. And then therefore, in devotion, in all the things that we do. Isn't that a big part of our challenge? You know, like, that's the classic sample of the question, Maharaj, I get the devotional practice part. You know, you get up in the morning and, you know, up till I go to work. I get it. It's really clear. Then I go to work and I sit down and I'm at my little cubicle and Krishna disappears and 5 o'clock bell rings and then I wonder what happened. And then I go back home and, you know, like, etc. So a hand is on our bead bag and chanting our mantra and doing the direct devotional activities. Okay, what about the rest of our life? How do we see Krishna in the rest of our life? I mean, certainly if the awakening of the mood of serving Krishna, which is what Maha Mantra does when we chant properly, that will carry that Krishna consciousness into our lives the rest of the day. And this is also there, that the practical guidance of keeping the intelligence in the proper orientation of seeing Krishna. Okay, so text 13. The self-realized soul is thus reflected first in the threefold ego and then in the body, senses and mind. So remember that the 10. One should see the self as one sees the sun. Yeah, text 10. One should be situated in the transcendental position. beyond the stages of material consciousness, and should be aloof from all other conceptions of life, thus realizing freedom from false ego. One should see his own self just as he sees the sun in the sky. Then it gives this reflection on pots and on the wall, and then comes this one. The self-realized soul is thus reflected first in the threefold ego, and then in the body, senses, and mind. Nice. As the sun makes its presence understood by its being reflected this way, that way. So the self-realized soul can see, although I'm acting in the world, the prior tendency or the material tendency of identifying with the body and the mind. And, you know, the modes of nature that are pushing me, and that's me. I'm the kind of person who fill in the blank. It's the modes of nature. When somebody says something, that's the kind of person I am. Or fill in the other blank. It's just the modes of nature, and then the modes of nature are acting upon the body and the mind. And that's all possible because of the presence of the soul. Without the presence of soul, matter is inert, and the modes of nature aren't active. No, during the pradhan state, the modes of nature aren't active. They're dormant. Send in the time, energy, and the souls, and modes of nature get activated. And then we identify through our good friend, the false ego. And then, you know, we live this struggle. Trying to be happy. Grasping at straws. A drowning man grasping at straws to save them. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The conditioned soul thinks, quote, I am this body. But a liberated soul thinks, quote, I am not this body, I am spirit soul. This, quote, I am, unquote, is called ego, or identification of the self. Quote, I am this body, or everything in relationship with this body is mine, is called false ego. But when one is self-realized and thinks that he is an eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, that identification is real ego. One conception is in the darkness of the threefold qualities of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and the other is in the pure state of goodness called Shuddha Sattva or Vasudeva. When we say that we give up our ego, this means that we give up our false ego, but real ego is always present. When one is reflected, I really like how Prabhupada is taking this metaphor and just massaging it, and he doesn't go somewhere else, he just stays with it and keeps illuminating the message. It's like making sandalwood paste. Just keep. And the fragrance comes, and the cooling effect is made accessible, although it's just a piece of wood. When one is reflected through the material contamination of the body and mind in false identification, he is in the conditional state. But when he is reflected in the pure stage, he is called liberated. The identification of oneself with one's material possessions in the conditional stage must be purified, and what one must identify himself in relationship with the Supreme Lord. In the conditioned state, one accepts everything as an object of sense gratification, and in the liberated state, one accepts everything for the service of the Supreme Lord. Krishna consciousness devotional service is the actual liberated stage of the living entity, otherwise both accepting and rejecting on the material platform, or in voidness, or impersonalism, are imperfect conditions for the pure soul. Second paragraph. By the understanding of the pure soul, called Satya Drik, one can see everything as a reflection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A concrete example can be given in this connection. Conditioned soul sees a very beautiful rose, and he thinks that the nice aromatic flower should be used for his own sense gratification. This is one kind of vision. A liberated soul, however, sees the same flower as a reflection of the Supreme Lord. He thinks, quote, this beautiful flower is made possible by the superior energy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it belongs to the Supreme Lord and should be utilized in his service, unquote. These are two kinds of vision. The conditioned soul sees the flower for his own enjoyment, and the devotee sees the flower as an object to be used in the service of the Lord. In the same way, one can see the reflection of the Supreme Lord in one's own senses, mind and body, in everything. With that correct vision, one can engage everything in the service of the Lord. It is stated in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that one who has engaged everything, dash, his vital energy, his wealth, his intelligence, and his words, in the service of the Lord, or who desires to engage all these in the service of the Lord, no matter how he is situated, is to be considered a liberated soul or Satya Drik. Such a man has understood things as they are. Satya Drik is repeated because it's in the verse. Satya means truth, Drik means to see, the seer of the truth or the self-realized soul. Again, remember the question that Devahuti has asked. How can I become free from this material attachment? It's your illusory energy, please remove it. So bhakti is that which can remove it, or bhakti is that which prompts the Supreme Lord, or that which comes from us, which indicates to the Supreme Lord we actually want him instead of something else, enjoyment separate from him, because bhakti means enjoying the position of being his servant. So then he removes the illusory energy. In the Canto 1, Chapter 7, the description given by Vyasadeva, or the verses that are describing the realization of Vyas when he sat down in meditation, he followed the instructions of Narada. There's 3-4 verses that are essence verses of the Bhagavatam in a certain way, because from those verses Vyas compiled the Bhagavatam. In his Santarbhas, Jiva Goswami 5 or 6 times takes those verses and analyzes them according to the particular message of that particular Santarbha that he's developing, because they're like roots, and from the roots something grows. So this is one of the something that grows from that root. This is how the mitigation process, what Vyas saw was, he saw the Supreme Lord, not only the Supreme Lord, Purusham Purnam, he saw the whole spiritual world. And then he also saw the illusory energy, and how the illusory energy was under the Supreme Lord's control. He saw the living entity, and the living entity's yaya sam mohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. Completely bewildered, sam moha, due to the influence of Maya, then he saw the means of the living entity becoming free from Maya, the influence of Maya. And that's the mitigating process of bhakti. So, nurturing bhakti is something that the Bhagavatam does. It's a devotional text. It's transcendental knowledge infused, this is now, I'm borrowing from Bhaktisiddhanta's teachings in Brahma Samhita, but it's where the internal potency